You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Lighting the chalice this morning, let this flame be a symbol of the warmth and light of our beloved community, and this morning a symbol of the unique convergence of our paths. And may the glow from this candle guide us in finding our way through the isolation we might be experiencing during lockdown, and into the light of friendship, love and support. May the glow of this candle help us to reflect on past mistakes and resolve to walk along new, more sustainable pathways for our children's, grandchildren's, and I guess for some of us, our great-grandchildren's futures. May we resist the political inertia, apathy and denial that tempts us into quick fixes and easy solutions, when what we need are new wisdoms and a revolution in how we will need to do things in the future. And may the glow of this candle be a beacon to draw us as individuals, as a church community, and as a nation, towards the new wisdoms, understandings and insights. Amen. Life is ironic. It takes sadness to know happiness, noise to appreciate silence, and absence to value presence. The suggested prelude today that I've selected is The Lamb by Kim Andre Anderson, a musical setting of the poem Little Lamb by the famous English poet and artist William Blake. The version that I've linked you to is performed by Cantori of Denver, USA, with musical directorship under Joel Rinsema. We come to the story for all ages, and I've suggested a link on the website that you might like to follow with your children, and the story most relevant today is story number 14. The interlude that I would suggest today is another Kim Andre Anderson composition, and it is simply based on the writings of St. Augustine of Hippo. You can pause this MP4 while you click on that link. Moving on, the title of my talk this morning is New Wisdoms to Secure Our Futures. Today I'll talk about new wisdoms and insights and how they might be used to deal with crises such as the COVID-19 pandemic, and what we, you and I, can do individually and collectively to cope with and indeed to grow from this current crisis. And at the outset, I wish to declare that I'm an optimist despite the challenges we face. And I base that judgment on how I'm still full of hope that we can work locally, nationally and globally with a common purpose to turn things around. I would suggest that this hope is expressed in our personal and church community commitment to our seven principles. And there are four steps in committing to anything. First of all, knowledge, to know. What knowledge, what wisdoms, to understand why these particular wisdoms, to decide, that is to resolve to do something, and then to act. What are we going to do about it? How will we act? You'll be familiar with the seven principles I've shown on the screen. I'll mention each separately during this talk. Dr. Rebecca Ann Parker identifies their sources. Natural wisdoms of Aboriginal people who've learnt to live sustainably with nature, and I'm talking about Aboriginal people from most continents. Also added to that, the source of just simply the human mystery and wonder of creation. The men and women also who confront evil with justice, compassion and love, and wisdom drawn from the world's religions. As well as that, we could add the lessons of history, philosophy, the sciences, and humanist teachings that have helped create a civil society. Reverend Doug Muter has criticised them, somewhat disingenuously, I think. Still, his criticisms, in inverted commas, focus the Unitarian mind and capture our attention. For example, he says of the second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. People may argue about what justice means, but everybody is for it. He says, our principles are littered with feel-good terms, spiritual growth, democratic process, the search for truth and meaning, world community, peace, liberty. Most religions approve of such concepts, but that's not very demanding. Believe a few really easy things, and beyond that, believe whatever you want, they seem to be saying. A potentially wimpy religion, he says. Now, the Reverend Muter's criticism is really directed at these principles being used as a credo. This was never their intention. Without action, they're nothing but a nodding in principle agreement. A wimpy Unitarian credo, he's described it as. So, there is an imperative there for action. How might these new wisdoms, our seven principles, guide our thinking and our actions? Well, I'll illustrate this in the context of our current COVID-19 pandemic. First of all, our natural wisdoms, our earliest wisdoms, point the way to sustainability, but they don't rest easily with our capitalist ethos, growth and more growth. To quote Gordon Gekko in the film Wall Street, that greed is good. Human population has expanded 32 times since the ancient biblical wisdoms were developed, and the challenges of living sustainably are so much greater today, only 3 years away from reaching 8 billion people on the planet, compared with the 250 million estimated at the time of writing the Jewish Torah in 950 before the current era, BCE. The ultimate challenge is to find a path towards personal, local, and global sustainability. Well, let's start breaking down what's essentially a huge global problem into more manageable parts. Together, these seven principles fit into five dimensions. There's an intrapersonal dimension, what goes in inside our heads, I guess, to understand oneself and one's emotions. Then there's an interpersonal dimension, that is between groups of two or more people. A community dimension, working together as local communities. Then there's a national dimension, followed by a global dimension, working globally on the biodiversity of planet Earth. Get our thinking right, and the rest will follow. Act strategically. Start with the intrapersonal dimension. Get our house, which is us, in order first. Then, acting together, it will make national and global dimensions more achievable. You'll remember the song, from little things, big things grow. So let's start today with our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. What tools can we select from it? In drawing the tools of our first principle, we have a responsibility not only to care for ourselves and watch out for others out of our duty of care, but as Unitarians also out of love, compassion, and concern for the well-being of our neighbours during this crisis. As virologists work towards a vaccine, our best hope today is in observing all the preventative measures we've been urged to adopt. Clearly, this is inherently an optimistic statement on human nature. Our natural human trajectory is towards good rather than evil. But we only have notions of good because we have bad. That evil acts by humans are overwhelmed by the collective good is why we humans have survived this long. Heroes will emerge from the current crisis as they have from previous crises, but also villains. So in the current COVID-19 crisis, we ask, how might this first principle guide our thoughts and actions? And how should we conduct our lives during the pandemic as Unitarians? How might it guide us in our understandings of the actions of others faced with the same crisis? And how might we, you and I, go about doing something about it? What tools might we select from our first principle? What action should we take? Well, we've all got an obligation to cherish our own bodies as well as our own souls before we can heal injury and bring love, justice, pleasure and joy to others. Out of a sense of self-worth grows a recognition of the inherent worth and dignity of others, that our default position will be that we owe others care and consideration. Jesus had it right. We're saved or redeemed by love of another, of others. Agape was the Greek word to what came closest to his idea of neighbourly love. Unitarians would use the term today, loving kindness. The second principle, equity and compassion in human relations. Ancient biblical wisdoms lie behind our second principle, justice, equity and compassion. Over these past 2 months, we've all done some learning as well as some self-examination of the lifestyles we've lived in the past and how successfully or unsuccessfully we've been able to cope with less since the lockdown. Equity is also needed at a global level and should be included. Sharing justice and compassion during the hard times are the key here. Unfortunately, there have been some who flout the rules. They'll say, it's just another version of the flu. It'll only be a problem for the sick and the elderly, not for us. The lockdown is destroying my life, my business, my relationships. And I can understand much of this. Their thinking seems to be, though, we're young, we will not lie down, will not be told to lie down, we're indestructible. And what if we do catch COVID-19? We'll only get it mildly or be asymptomatic. A new way of thinking will be needed at an individual, local community, national and global level. But we need to show compassion to protesters who've been impacted most by the effects of the lockdown on their businesses, their jobs, their families and their capacity to pay their bills and to meet their mortgages. Some have slipped through the cracks of the financial support given by governments. Conspiracy theorists say it's some sort of plot. This belief is rooted in what I've previously described as cognitive dissonance. We've seen it in climate change denial. Denial flourishes in peer-generated social media mythology, and it's based on lies, misconceptions, and half-truths that spreads like a virus on the social media, uninformed by science, medicine, and common sense. A blame culture develops. It's paranoid about change and the challenge that change presents. But change we must. Equity will be needed in our sixth principle at the global level. World community with peace, liberty, justice and equity for all. So I'll revisit this later. We've also seen the response of many based on fear and rumour mongering in the social media to stockpile supplies of food, medication and toilet paper. In the United States, many citizens lined up outside gun shops to buy guns. Many deniers have been filmed in trucks armed to the teeth and prepared to breach COVID-19 lockdowns. Our third principle, coming to that, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Jesus reminds us of our responsibilities and relationships with others to show neighbourliness, patience, forgiveness, to avoid pride, vanity and arrogance, to show generosity, love, tolerance. The COVID-19 pandemic throws out a special challenge to us at our most vulnerable time. We've needed to become a virtual church. We don't have the luxury of shared fellowship, shared worship and a chat over tea and coffee, but we at least have some of the technology and tools needed to go online to sustain our spiritual life, just as schools have used technology to educate students in lockdown at home. I'm heartened by the resilience of our members and their willingness to find new ways to maintain our church community in spiritual and practical ways, and indeed to grow through this pandemic. And our young people are stepping in to assist us older folk with their IT skills. What tools will we select from our fourth principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning? Responsibility is the key word here. You and I have a moral obligation to select the most reliable sources of information about the virus and to act on it. It's not my purpose in this talk to give you advice on practices that will minimise your chances of contracting COVID-19 or passing it on to others. But there are other websites and news sources that are to be trusted. One, I feel, is the ABC, endearingly known as Auntie to many. We borrow the term from the Brits, who use it as a term of endearment for the BBC. The source of this trustworthiness is the ABC's 1932 Charter of Independence from Government Interference. Some standout programs to me, and ones that I watch every week, Paul Barry's Media Watch, a weekly expose of news media distortions, half-truths, misrepresentations and damn lies from the commercial media, of which News Corp and the Daily Telegraph are the standout purveyors. Another is our Adelaide boy Sean McAuliffe's Mad as Hell, and Sam McMillan, alias Sammy J, you'll be familiar with, possibly, one-man political satire. You may recall Heartfelt Thoughts and Prayers on the tendency of governments to offer soothing words during crises without really doing anything about the underlying problems, due to pressure, no doubt, from the big end of town. The classic example there is, of course, more coal mining in the background of huge bushfires during the last summer. The ABC is now proving what an asset a truly independent news service really is to Australians. We are wise to visit their coronavirus updates regularly, and I've included the link on the page in this MP4 presentation. And then there's Dr. Norman Swan, the Scottish-born ABC contributing Medicare journalist, who's recently extended his influence into Canada through the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. But he lives and works here. This is just part of his extension. Thirdly, there is the Australian Government website at the link that I provided there, and this is informed by the Commonwealth's Chief Medical Officer. And of course, naturally, due to the economic burden caused by the lockdown, it has a political agenda that will favour getting the Australian workforce and economy back into full swing as soon as possible. I can understand this. We will, sooner or later, however, need to pay our way out of the lockdown, with the risk that this will reverse any gains. What not to trust? Well, there are sources of information that are decidedly untrustworthy. These flourish largely unchallenged within the popular social media. Such sites are rife with conspiracy theories that the COVID-19 virus was a biological agent that accidentally escaped from a Chinese virology centre. We see what we want to believe. It's prompted calls by the EU and Australia for an independent inquiry into the causes and origins of the COVID-19 outbreak, perhaps through the UN agency of the World Health Organization. In China, similar theories abound that blame the USA, that US military personnel secretly released the virus whilst on a visit to China. And of course, I'm fully aware of the irony that my talk will have been posted on social media, indeed on Facebook. We are wise to avoid social media sites peddling misinformation. They flourish within closed networks, they exclude or are intolerant of challenge, they are self-sustaining and self-seeking, and they prey on vulnerable, impressionable and paranoid people who see only what they want to believe. The internet is already a war zone. Unfriendly countries contribute to such sites in order to spread national disunity and unrest within Australia. So what tools might we choose from our fifth principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large? We're wise to defer matters to church leaders and our committee. COVID-19 has forced us to suspend church services at a time when we're so vulnerable, but we're working through it via Facebook and Zoom. Nationally, our democratic system is threatened by powerful, greedy corporate interests who seek to control and influence government, and through the news media, our opinions. Many powerful corporations providing the IT services you and I use daily move offshore to tax havens and leave you and I to pay their taxes. What can we do about that? COVID-19 has shown the vulnerability of capitalism. Many corporations, quite large ones, have sought handouts from government. The sixth principle, the quest for a sense of world community, with peace, liberty and justice for all. Both the sixth and seventh principles have a global dimension. They are linked together by the COVID-19 pandemic, simply because we can't work towards achieving the seventh without addressing the sixth. Together, I believe, they are the ultimate challenge facing humankind globally. But how are peace, liberty and justice, and we'll add equity from our second principle, so inextricably linked to stewardship, respect and care for the web of life that sustains us? Crises such as the COVID-19 pandemic are comparatively easy to resolve cooperatively. The national and global cooperation, whilst not perfect, has given me some hope. Nations work globally to stop the use of fluorocarbons that were destroying the ozone layer, leaving us vulnerable to harmful UV light radiation. Did you know that 1 kilogram of the refrigerant R410A, fluorocarbon, has the same greenhouse impact as 2 tons of carbon dioxide? That's the equivalent of running your car for 6 months. However, some countries have sneakily increased their rate of fluorocarbon emission to reduce costs and to gain a competitive advantage. The bio-environmental issues that underlie COVID-19 and other pandemics are less easy to resolve. The root cause of the pandemic is unsustainability, caused by human overpopulation, the pandemic of ourselves, us. What can we do about it? Well, the highest birth rates are found in countries with the lowest socioeconomic development and with no social welfare net to catch those who are struggling. Couples in the poorest countries with high mortality rates produce enough children to ensure that at least one survives to care for them in their old age. For example, Niger, the country with the highest average birth rate in the world, one of the poorest, has 44.8 births per 1,000 of population, or 3.57 times as many births per 1,000 as in Australia. And in case you're thinking that Australia, with one of the lowest birth rates, 12.561 births per 1,000, is doing its bit to help achieve sustainability, let's remember that the average Australian's consumption of the planet's resources, as measured by expenditure per capita, is 205 times that of the average Nigerian. A learned paper published by the CSIRO before the lockdown explained that COVID-19 is a zoonotic disease caught from animals. The first infected by the current outbreak were the stall holders from a seafood market in Wuhan in Hubei province in central China, who contracted it after contact with these animals. You see, it's a status thing in part of Asia, especially in Vietnam and China, to eat pangolins. A way to show off and impress your friends. Conspicuous consumption, Asian style. They're in short supply, so they're very expensive to buy. Of course, the warmongers who are already beating their war drums, aided and abetted by the not-so-independent press such as News Corp, accused China of the release of an agent grown in a virology lab in Wuhan. The facts put a lie to this. The coronavirus in pangolins is 99% identical to the human coronavirus genome. The coronavirus in bats is 96% identical to ours. This makes it so easy for the virus to jump from one species to another, pangolins or bats or both of them, to us. This recent National Geographic magazine states that coronatype viruses have been known about for about 50 years at least. More recently, MERS and SARS you'll have heard of, and this is COVID number 19. The method used to identify viruses was first discovered by Scottish-born virologist June Almeida in the early 70s, as she used antibodies from infected individuals to coat tiny particles which then act as markers that quickly attach themselves to viruses. Electron microscopes can then be used to locate the markers and identify the virus they're attached to. Are the dobbers in of the virus cells that are otherwise very hard to see. COVID-19 is symptomatic of a planet whose biological systems have been stretched to breaking point. It's only one of increasing numbers of zoonotic diseases that have jumped from animals to us. Whether the cuddly pangolin, a scaly anteater, is the source of COVID-19 is by no means proven by scientists. The appearance of COVID-19 is not an expression of the wrath of God, but symptomatic of a planet whose biological systems have been stretched to breaking point by human overpopulation, by the human pandemic, if you like, and our overexploitation of our biological life support systems. There are simply too many of us at the expense of the biodiversity that is supposed to sustain us. Nature seeks to restore balance quickly by ridding itself of the human plague. It is not an angry God, but it is the result of insatiable human greed, apathy, and habitual disregard for the web of life that supports all life on Earth. Destroy it, and we destroy ourselves. The world's forests and biodiversity it stores are found disproportionately in what are called pejoratively less developed or underdeveloped countries. This pandemic is caused by human overpopulation, hastening the decline in biodiversity and accelerated by exponential human population growth. As a species, we've just been too successful, and nature is now seeking to restore the balance. I'd like to explain this process by using a simple hypothesis that I've expressed as an equation. It summarizes what I've been saying. That the probability of the pandemic, which I've called there V, is equal to human population, which I've called P, divided by biodiversity, B. In other words, as human population P increases exponentially as it happens, so does the likelihood of the pandemic virus V. There's a direct relationship there. And as the biodiversity B decreases exponentially as it happens, the likelihood of a pandemic increases, an inverse relationship. And as we've seen in our last global pandemic, the Spanish flu, just following the First World War, and the current COVID-19 pandemic, it will spread exponentially if we don't self-isolate. Globally, at the heart of deforestation lies inequality, the equitability component of our second principle. Although it's used there in the context of human relationships, I'm using it here in the equally important context of improved equitability amongst nations in their access to and use of global resources. So often the natural resources, including the biodiversity reserves found in the forests of poor nations, are plundered by overseas corporations for corporate gain, using cheap local labour and benefiting a few powerful people within those poor countries. I suspect deforestation will only be stopped if developed or wealthy nations such as our own pay an economic rent to developing nations in Africa and South America, a rent that is equal to any profits that the land containing the remaining forests would yield with Western-style clearing and cash cropping, which of course we've already done. Reforestation will be needed, putting back forests and biodiversity where we can. And equally important are the submarine ocean forests, especially the large ocean kelp forests that in the past produced as much photosynthesis as our land forests. And we badly need an ultimate layer of global world governance to address global inequality. This would need UN-mandated standards of good governance and environmental responsibility across all nations. One thing the COVID-19 lockdown has shown us is that there is hope. Many of us have been able to cope with a lockdown and get on with our lives, to be productive, to enjoy a simpler life, and to find fulfillment with less. However, we need to remember that so many others are doing it tough, some within our own church alone or ill, and they will need our help and support. I've outlined some of the insights from our seven principles that we need to meet the challenges of COVID-19 and its underlying causes. But I also believe that you and I, we as Unitarians, can use these new wisdoms to make a difference within our communities. And that will reach incrementally in the world beyond. It might also grow exponentially. From little things, big things grow. But first, let's jolt ourselves out of the inertia caused by apathy. We can make a difference, but we need to start now. These new wisdoms do help us to secure all our futures. It may only take a catalyst such as COVID-19 to start the revolution we're all going to need. We come now to the postlude. I've called it A Little Credo. It's a musical piece, again written by the Norwegian composer Kim André Arnesen. These words are especially poignant, as they were said to be written by a Jewish man awaiting execution by the Nazis. I could find no photographic record of these words, other than some hearsay evidence that the words existed. The guards did allow Jewish prisoners to write on the walls as they awaited their execution, words often to their loved ones, similarly imprisoned and awaiting a similar fate. The Cologne concentration camp is preserved today as a reminder of the evils of the Holocaust and to the anti-Semitism that led the Nazis to the final solution. We can wander through the prison and read these words. And because anti-Semitism and racism still persist today, they will continue to haunt us, as do all other prejudices that blame and demean. However, the Unitarian in me sought to test the story. No scribbled writing on the wall, so was it a myth? I found this little credo was actually written by a German Lutheran theologian and pastor, Christoph Blumhardt, who lived from 1842 to 1919, one of the founders of Christian socialism in Germany and Switzerland. They're the same words, but with the addition of his fourth line, last line, the simple affirmation, "I believe, I believe." Isn't that how mythology grows? But oh, how I wanted to believe in the myth, that this simple, powerful credo was really scribbled on that Cologne prison wall, an affirmation made just before his execution of faith over doubt and despair. Each of us have our own unique conception of God. My Unitarian God, the God of my head, is a simple God found not in dogma, but in natural wisdoms and in nature that we've all been hell-bent on destroying, and in old and new wisdoms and principles that guide us Unitarians towards hope, harmony and sustainability. But then there is the God of my heart, which comes to the fore, usually when I sing sacred music. It's awakened by other myths and metaphors, and of course, this little credo. We only fully understand goodness in times of darkness and despair. When it seems to have deserted us and our God seems silent, we need to go on believing that human goodness prevails over human evil, that loving kindness prevails over hate. So our new wisdoms encourage us to live our lives more sparingly for our planet's sake, but they also remind us that we must love wastefully, and then our God will truly sing. I believe in the sun, even when it is not shining. And I believe in love, even when I don't feel it. And I believe in God, even when he is silent. Amen, and have a great week.